This show was previously broadcast live on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com.
Good morning, everybody. This is Richard Martin from the Richard Martin's Wake Up Call, and we are coming to you from Singapore and being relayed by the good offices of the Progressive Radio Network in New York City. Well, in case you weren't aware of this, which I'm sure you are, but some of the close to $7 billion in projects in stimulus checkup create few jobs, benefit private interests over the public good, or make improvements where they are not necessary. Some of them send money to companies facing fraud charges. Others take millions of dollars to do work local officials and experts admit are not needed or will not help. Stimulus money has been or will be spent on dinner cruises, golf courses, puppet shows, and stimulus road signs. Many Americans will question whether investing $787 billion in these projects are the highest national priorities. Well, ladies and gentlemen, let me give you some examples of what we're talking about here. The Department of Energy has announced an award for up to $5 million to install a geothermal energy system capable of heating an almost empty mall in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. Taxpayers in Oregon may be surprised to learn that the largest stimulus project in their state is not a new road or bridge, but a $133 million makeover for the federal building in downtown Portland. The money will go toward greening the Edith Green Wendell Wyatt Federal Building in the hope of making it a model for energy-efficient government offices in the Northwest. That said, for $133 million, some may wonder why they didn't simply tear it down and start all over again. Well, agency officials expect to construct a type of vegetative skin made of plants on the exterior of the building to help with heating and cooling costs. In 2007, a new federal building was constructed in downtown San Francisco with similar state-of-the-art energy efficiency features for $144 million, nearly the same cost to merely renovate the Portland Federal Building. Both buildings are 18 stories tall, built with energy-efficient technologies, and house federal agency offices. The main difference is that the San Francisco building is much larger, with an additional 100,000 usable square feet in comparison with its counterpart in Portland. Well, how about the DTV advertising agency generating three jobs at a cost of $5.9 million? It's an advertising agency that ultimately reported little job creation, which received a multi-million dollar contract to help the government overcome a poorly managed transition to digital television, only to report three jobs created. Lockheed Martin will receive a total of more than $21 million in federal money, with a $4.7 million funded through the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act from the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, NASA, to advance research for supersonic jet travel. High ticket costs, fuel guzzling, and the infamous sonic boom helped doom commercial supersonic travel in the past. The last Concorde jet flew in 2003. Then there is a $2.2 million stimulus grant which will help pay for new pipes to pump recycled water to the Sharp Park Golf Course in San Francisco, California. Unfortunately, the golf course may not exist for much longer. The City Council is considering closing the public course over concerns for the California red-legged frog and the San Francisco garter snake, both of which live in the area. 50 homes on Martha's Vineyard in Massachusetts will participate in a test program to allow an outside party to control their energy use, Big Brother style. The initiative will allow participating households to purchase discounted appliances from General Electric that are capable of communicating with and being controlled by an off-site computer system. Cost $787,250. How about the repaved Georgia Road getting repaved again at a cost of $88,000? The Georgia Department of Transportation contractors are using stimulus funds to repave a busy street in Atlanta, part of which was repaved just 2 years ago. Rebecca Serner, a local bicyclist, noted that the existing road is pretty much the smoothest side in town right now, adding about the new project, "I don't know if it's necessary, but it's nice." Well, studying the Icelandic Arctic environment in the Viking Age, cost $94,902, courtesy of the University of Massachusetts Boston, which received this $94,902 stimulus grant to count pollen grains collected from farms in Iceland and allowed researchers to continue studying the role the Arctic environment played in the evolution of civic life during the Viking Age. The National Institute of Health is using stimulus funds to pay for a year-long $219,000 study to follow female college students for a year to determine whether young women are more likely to hook up, the college equivalent of casual sex, after drinking. A few dilapidated buildings are largely what remains in Gothic Colorado, a ghost town that is also home to the Rocky Mountain Biological Laboratory. Over the next 5 years, however, Gothic will host a $448,995 National Science Foundation study by Dr. David Inouye on the impact of climate change on the town's wildflowers. A $700,000 grant will pay for 48 people to help Oregon crabbers recover crab pots they have lost at sea. The two-year project expects to yield 2,000 lost pots a year. Oregon crabbers reportedly lose an estimated 15,000 crab pots a year. The effort will use 10 boats, planes, and a telephone hotline for people to phone in crab pot sightings. If all 4,000 pots are recovered as expected, the grantees will spend an average of $175 per crab pot. Though John's Sporting Goods in nearby Everett, Washington, sells new crab pots online for as little as $19.95. Two major universities in the state are receiving a combined $950,000 to examine the division of labor in ant colonies. Arizona State University was awarded $500,000 in stimulus funding by the National Science Foundation, while the University of Arizona will receive $450,000. Indiana University professors received $221,355 in economic stimulus funds to study why young men do not like to wear condoms. Homeland Security funds assist boat tours of Alcatraz at a cost of $50,783. A ferry service that once contracted for the federal government will receive this amount in stimulus Homeland Security grants, despite no longer doing any work for the government. Tourism may not be booming in Crofton, Kentucky, population 838, but the town has received $300,000 in stimulus funds to convert an abandoned downtown hotel into a visitor center. And finally, located on a barrier island accessible only by water, Mononoi National Wildlife Fund on Cape Cod, Massachusetts, is an area that has been empty and uninhabited for decades. However, the Department of the Interior will spend nearly $1.5 million in federal stimulus funds to fix the lighthouse and other facilities in the refuge. The project will restore the lighthouse, living quarters, and an oil shed. Well, ladies and gentlemen, if that doesn't stimulate you to get up in arms and go down and demonstrate, you know, in front of the relevant institution in Washington, D.C., I don't know what does. And this is what they're doing, and this is what they have just announced they wish to do more of, and this is what is sending the stock market sky high. And all I can say is, wait for it. It's going to come to a poverty-stricken area near you, i.e. everything is going to collapse, because none of this has any bearing on the economy whatsoever. It has no use, no utility value. It simply obliges people to fulfill the whims of the politicians who, guess what, want to be re-elected in 2010 and then in 2012. Well, there you are, the news from within. All right, ladies and gentlemen, my name is still Richard Martin, and this is still the Richard Martin's Wake Up Call. And as always, the toll-free number is still 888-873-4643. It is ready and waiting for your use to call in your questions, your comments, your rants, and we will be standing by to receive them, and I will be taking them as they come flowing in thick and fast, and hopefully being able to answer them. If you want to send them in by email, of course, the email is also the same at rm@gfawd.com. That's RM for Richard Martin, GFAWD for Global Financial Advisory Wealth Design.com. Once more, rm@gfawd.com. And if you want to call me in private to discuss your own personal financial affairs, the direct line to me in Singapore via Florida is 941-441-1682. It's my personal line, and you're all welcome to use it to call in to ask any questions in private that you would like to have answered, presumably about your personal financial situation, though it could be about any other matter on which I have expertise, which is precious few, but give it a go if you want. It's 941-441-1682. Now, I would like to remind you that on Sunday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and for those of you listening in Singapore, that's 10 a.m. on Monday morning, but I don't suppose there are that many of you. But anyway, Sunday evening at 9 p.m. New York time, there will be the Richard Martin discussion group, where we hope to repeat the experience of 2 weeks ago. We had a lot of people calling in. We were talking about the American empire, existent or lack of. And we had a very interesting discussion. We got people talking to each other, and I think it was a very successful show, and I would like to repeat this on a weekly basis. But this depends on you, ladies and gentlemen. It depends on you calling in and livening things up. I can only do so much. Perhaps I should just call in myself and put on an accent and try to pretend to be somebody else, but I don't think that would last. So I'm not going to do it. I'm going to depend on you, ladies and gentlemen. This is Sunday evening, this coming Sunday at 9 p.m. I shall be there moderating your questions and your discussions and other forms of communications to our show. All right. And, of course, needless to say, the call-in number will be the same. 888-873-4643. All right. Well, you know, despite all the polemic that's going about this week, and as you know, I don't discuss politics on the show, so I'm not about to start, but Barack Obama was, of course, alive and well in Norway, giving a talk about peace, albeit having just created even more war. But, you know, I will tell you that I do truly believe that he had good intentions when he started all this. The reality, I think, is that he then found that he's no more in charge of the U.S. than the Queen is of England. You know, the powers that run the governments of the world are standing at attention, ready to move behind the scenes. If you do watch Obama, you might pick up on how lost the poor man looks. You know, he's in over his head on this. I think he thought he could change the status quo. Clearly, he was mistaken, as are all presidents who come in with good intentions. I think it's time for everyone to recognize that, you know, because people were not engaged in what governments have been doing for some time now, they've given up their power, you know, the people's power, to the corporations and the lobbyists. You know, how else can one explain the mainstream media and its so-called journalists? You know, no one reports the news anymore. All talking points, every news item is based not on the fact, but on someone's opinion passed off as actual news. You recognize this. I'm sure you all see this on your TV sets and basically in your newspapers. You know that this is how the news comes to you. This is not how it happened in the past. But, you know, the sheep just follow and, you know, bellow the talking points. I do feel sorry for Obama. I mean, he is being, you know, wagged by the tail, and there's no way he can get off this train without throwing himself off. This will be the same whether or not he's reelected or whoever gets elected in his place. I don't think it will end until the whole system basically changes and true democracy takes hold. Okay, well, the Australian opposition finance spokesman, Barnaby Joyce, believes that the United States government could default on its debt, triggering what he calls an economic Armageddon, which will make the recent global financial crisis pale into insignificance. I sent out an article about this to my email distribution group earlier today. Senator Joyce told the Sydney Herald yesterday that he didn't mean to alarm the public, but there needed to be a debate about Australia's contingency plan for a sovereign debt default by the US or even by a local state government. And I quote, a default by the US means complete economic collapse around the world, and the question we have got to ask ourselves is, where are we in that, he said. He said the chances of a U.S. debt default were distant, but real, and politicians were not doing the electorate a favor by refusing to acknowledge the risk. The worst scenario is where the U.S. doesn't repay its debt, the $2 trillion in debt it owes to the Chinese, the $1 trillion in debt it owes to the Japanese, and the U.S. $1 trillion debt to others. And he says that at that point, we are really nailed. When asked what sort of contingency plan he would advocate, Senator Joyce said it was like trying to prepare for a tidal wave, but the local economy should have more self-reliance. Quote, things you look for in that economic Armageddon are the capacity to feed ourselves, the capacity to provide the fundamentals in medicines and basic fundamental requirements for our nation, unquote. Likelihood of increased protectionism as states seek to obtain maximum economic guarantee against the threat of UN-initiated meltdown, I think, is very great. I hadn't seen things in this light. I had not looked for protectionism to be based on this kind of a scenario, but the more it becomes a perceived reality, the more nations will close in on themselves and basically say the devil take the hindmost and just frankly look after their own people. All right, we have a caller named Tom from the Queens who'd like to talk about his 401k. Tom, hi, how are you?
Hey, hi, Richard. How's the weather where are you again? Oh, man, Singapore. I forgot.
Singapore. Well, the weather's a little cooler. We are in the monsoon season right now, which means it rains indiscriminately, which means that every time you go out, you need to take a sort of pack with you, survival supplies, a poncho, maybe an umbrella, a pair of flip-flops, and hope. Does that answer your question, Tom?
Yeah, absolutely. It's just a little bit cooler here in New York, kind of chilly morning.
Well, I believe it is, but the umbrella will do for both places, so I guess we've got something in common. Go ahead, Tom. Let's hear what's on your mind.
Yeah, my question is regarding the 401k that I have at my job. I work for the city of New York, and my employer does not contribute to 401k at all. However, we have an option to contribute them, you know, ourselves to that plan for a small fee, which is, you know, $12 and change every quarter, I believe, which is not bad. And with the gloom outlook of the future, you know, economy of our country, my question is, what should I do? Should I still contribute?
Well, hang on a second, Tom. I'm sorry to interrupt you. What's the $12 for again?
That's the $12.50 is just a fee to be in a 401k program. Also, it covers another kind of program, 457 plan and IRA as well. So it's a kind of it's just a fee they charge every quarter. You know,
isn't that interesting? You know, I have never heard of a fee being charged to an employee for the privilege of having a 401k. I'm not even sure if that's legal. I'm assuming it.
That's a New York City rule. I mean, it is what it is. Now they increased it slightly to $16 or $18. I'm not sure exactly. But regardless, I'm contributing pretty much maximum what I can. It comes to $16,500 per year, you know, as per our government regulations. And I wonder if I should still contribute, knowing that the economy is getting worse, or should I stop contributing pretty much?
I can't answer that question precisely because A, I don't know what your menu of choices allows you to invest in. You did say something about being allowed to have an IRA. If you can basically, direct your own account, in other words, make your own investments and be able to bypass their stupid menu, then it's definitely worth it because then there are things to do. There are creative ways to make money even during the downturn. So I would be very, very much in favor of that. But I haven't got enough information to answer your question. And I think you might want to give me a call, to discuss this. I mean, it would require more in-depth information. On a general level, though, I would say if you have a self-directed facility, then indeed you should max out. Now, I don't know whether you are married. Are you married?
Yes, I am.
Does your wife
contribute to her plan, you know, with her job? So we both have an opportunity to do it.
All right. Well, this is a good thing, but, you know, there are too many details I'm going to need to discuss with you in order to give you a really good answer to this. I hope I've given you a good general answer, which is, you know, interesting for everybody, which is, yes, max out, provided you have some kind of a safe depository for your funds, because you don't want to be buying bonds under any circumstances. You certainly don't want to be buying stocks under any circumstances right now. The bond market is falling quite dramatically as we speak, and I expect it to fall further, and I've been saying this for some time. But I do think that it's worth your while giving me a call here, Tom, because I think I can give you much more focused advice when I get more information. So if you want to call me later on after the show sometime later today, then please feel free to do so.
Okay, perfect. No, my worry is my worries are that the value of the dollar is also kind of tumbling downward, and that was also my concern. Would I be wise to keep as much dollars in 401k, or rather maybe get some number of those dollars and convert it to different currency, for example, maybe European euro.
Well, no, actually, may I respectfully put you right on that one. the dollar is actually soaring right now and has been for a few days. The dollar was in a very oversold situation, and I have been saying, and I've actually said on this show, that I think that the dollar will go up. It has nothing to do with an improving economy, but simply because there are default debts, you know, there are foreclosures of one sort or another, bankruptcies, and all this takes dollars out of the system, Tom. And when the dollars are taken out of the system, you need more dollars for the remainder of the people, because they have to derive dollars with which to pay their debts. Remember, even if prices go down, the debt does not. Debt remains constant. And so for people who have the wherewithal to pay debts, they need dollars to do this. And they have to get dollars. And one of the only ways they can get it these days is by simply going out and buying them in the foreign exchange market. That, in turn, pushes the price of the dollar up. And I fully expect to see this happen for the next few months, maybe even a year or a year and a half, before it turns around and goes back down again. And, of course, this is having a negative effect on gold, which is what I also expected to happen, and I was, you know, waving people off the idea of buying gold. So don't worry about the dollar. No, no, no. You can always take money out of your 401k and pay the penalties and do all this later on if you have to. But for the time being, I would keep your money in the 401k, and we can talk about what kind of investments you should be involved with later if you like. But in principle, you're doing the right thing by the sound of it. I'd like to know more about your financial situation, you know, what kind of savings you have and your mortgage, because obviously if you have a mortgage, it might be a good idea to pay it down. But anyway, that would be the advice for the time being, Tom. And so thanks for the call. And I will look forward to talking to you maybe later. All right, well, ladies and gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen, I believe that we have come to the moment in the proceedings where I take a break. And so I shall do so and be back within the next few minutes.
You are listening to the Progressive Radio Network, your number one source for progressive commentary.
Hey, did you miss your favorite show? Don't worry, PRN has you covered. Just log on to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com and go to the archive page, where you can choose from any of our great programs. Listen or download shows from yesterday, or even ones dating months back. The Progressive Radio Network, striving to make your lives easier.
Hello! Check out my show, The Animal Magnet Pet Radio, live every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern on Progressive Radio Network. Or catch it anytime you like by scrolling through the archives. You'll hear me, Deborah Wolf, best-selling author and award-winning radio host, chatting with the best pet experts and animal A-listers in the world about controversial topics like breed bans, the indoor versus outdoor cat debate, and whatever else is hot in the news and on their minds that matters to animals and the people who love them. Plus, we tell pet jokes, we'll give you trivia and smart, quirky facts, recipes, and take-home tricks and tests, homework your pets will love. Email your pet problems to me and we'll solve them on air. So listen to The Animal Magnet on Progressive Radio Network and get your animal fix.
Ever wonder why some people have successful lives? Well, let's shrink about this. Hi, I'm Dr. Molly Barrow, author of Matchlines for Singles and the Malia and Teacup Self-Esteem Building Series for Children. Please join me and my guests every Tuesday morning from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time to explore psychological and practical problem solving, from personal issues to world events. You can call in to join the conversation or just enjoy listening. If you're looking for balance in your relationship, career choices, family, and your planet, please join Dr. Molly Barrow and Shrink About This Tuesday at 10 Eastern on www.progressiveradionetwork.com.
This is PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
All right, I believe that we are back, and so just let me relate a few snippets of information to you before we move on. This business of the Dubai World's inability to pay its debts on time is actually very serious. It's another ominous event in the recent emergence of sovereign debt problems. But you know, after the initial blithe dismissal of the emergence of subprime mortgage problems, the world should have learned that such events never occur in a vacuum. After a worldwide debt binge based on the theory that assets can only rise in value, an unexpected severe decline in asset value leaves debtors with too little cash flow to service their debts. And so therefore, it was really naive to think that Dubai would be the only nation impacted. And sure enough, other shoes started to fall. Fitch lowered their rating recently on Greece to BBB, and S&P followed with a change in Spain's outlook to negative on its current AA-plus rating. The firm had already downgraded Portuguese bonds a few days earlier. The distress in Greece, Portugal, and Spain places the ECB in a tough position. The central bank has to do what's best for all 16 member nations as a whole, and when they tighten monetary policy, the stresses on the weak members obviously gets even worse. I don't think it would be a surprise to see other nations in debt trouble as well, not only in Europe, but anywhere else on the globe. Euro is, I think, a very sick currency indeed. And Tom, another reason why I think that the dollar will rise is because people are going to come to realize that, you know, sick though the United States is with the economy and all the problems it has and the debt situation, you know, other currencies are not far behind in the sickness stakes. You know, the euro has also been the victim of an enormous amount of debt, foolishly and injudiciously lent out to countries in Eastern Europe, among others, which are all imploding as we speak. There's no telling really where this is going to end. I mean, the euro is a currency which, as I just said, has to cover a number of different countries, all with their different problems and concerns. So they don't really have a unified economic structure such as the United States, and all of which to say that I think that the euro is probably in for a heightened period of weakness for the time being. Well, according to RealtyTrack, residential foreclosures will reach a record high of 3.9 million this year, compared to the previous record of 3.2 million in 2008. November was the ninth consecutive month in which foreclosures exceeded 300,000. Although the November number was down 15% from the July peak, the number of filings was held back by work on mortgage modifications and a temporary lull in the number of adjustable rate resets, which we've talked about on the show and which I have indicated frequently in my emails. Once the work of modifications is finished, the remaining homes will be thrown into foreclosure, as sure as I am sitting here talking to you right now. And please note that the federal programs to modify loans have met with little success so far, and that of those that have been modified, a large percentage have already fallen behind in monthly payments. And this is going to be as true of other stimulus programs as it is of the mortgage stimulus programs. It was already true, becoming even more true of the Cash for Clunker program, and we're going to have a Cash for Corker programs apparently as well. And of course, in addition to the potential foreclosures already in the pipeline, a new wave of resets is about to begin, as I mentioned a few weeks ago, and this will extend into early to mid-2011. And this, of course, is going to result in another further cascade of foreclosures, increased inventories, and downward pressure on home prices. So, ladies and gentlemen, be warned. This is not the beginning of the end of anything. This is truly a lull in the storm of economic disruption, which is going to hit heavily in every part of the globe. and the United States, unfortunately, is going to be among the worst hit. But it is not the end, and there is no recovery that you need concern yourselves with at this point. You know, there's a number that you will not hear mentioned anywhere in the mainstream media, and that number is 327,729. And that number is how many people shifted to emergency unemployment compensation programs in the last week alone, hitting an all-time record high of 4.2 million. So you see, as everyone is focused on the benign picture of initial claims in the last week, which was only 474,000, the number of people rolling off continuing benefits has exploded and is now a stunning 592,579 only in the last 2 weeks. I suggest you look for this number to keep going into the stratosphere as the six-month continuing claims cliff keeps getting hit by more and more people who are unemployed and keep looking not only for believable change, but actual jobs to go with it. Oh, tough, tough life we have. Tough, tough, tough. Ladies and gentlemen, the phone number to call in if you wish to follow on in Tom's footsteps is 888-873-4643. Once again, 888-873-4643. And may I remind you once again of our program, the discussion group on Sunday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, where we will be talking about emigration. And I will start out by giving some ideas and rationales for what I think you should be doing and considering in terms of immigration. I will be upping the ante as time goes by. I've already been having questions about this issue, and I feel the time is very close when I shall be issuing a red light alert on this particular subject. And I won't do it yet, but when the time comes, you will be my favorite listeners, the ones to hear about it first. All right, well, let's have a look at some of the mail. Hello, hello, hello. All right, folks, I'm assuming we're back online. I don't know what happened there. We just had a hiatus, a little hitch, but we're back. And let's take some of the mail. And let's start with Steve Kruger's rant. Steve Kruger has this to say. Richard, over the last 12 years, our climate has been getting colder, not warmer. We are in a generally warming trend that is dictated by the orbit of the planet as it goes from elliptical to circular. The Earth has been doing this for the last 4 billion years, unless you're George Bush. In his case, make it 6,000 years. This is the cycle of life on the planet. Ice ages come and go. Man is an afterthought on the planet, a late arrival, and we will have no effect on the survival of the planet. When I look at the gathering in Copenhagen, I see confusion on the faces of most of those who manage to remain awake. I am thrilled at the release of those emails as they have saturated with the light of day the shakedown attempt that we call global warming. I'm sure you are aware of this, ladies and gentlemen. These were emails from that were hacked into and broken out from the University of East Anglia in England, showing how people had tried to manipulate the figures. I continue with Steve's rant. Ignorant politicians worldwide will allow the trading of carbon futures to become a reality. To get a mental grasp of what this will mean and cost, you need look no further than CDOs in the banking world. As deadly as CDOs are, in at least somewhere inside them is a real property, a house that may or may not have some value. With carbon trading, we're talking trading air. You exhale. When was the last time someone expressed an interest in purchasing your breath? I can see this expanding worldwide under the sham wow guidance of the United Nations. Keep in mind the UN is a synonym for corruption. Within 10 years, this could make the $600 trillion in CDOs look like chump change. Another piece of brilliance was a Fox interview of Karl Rove, as he was boasting about how George Bush cut carbon emissions 12% in his 8 years in office. Rove said, quote, he used the technology of the day to accomplish this. At first look, you might say, maybe I have Bush all wrong, and maybe his IQ is larger than his hat size. You put end of quote marks there. Steve, I can't believe Rove said that, but hey, miracles happen. To continue, this is not the case. During his 8 years, industry and manufacturing was fleeing to China, so this reduced the carbon footprint and reduced a ton of jobs too. Nice going, Mr. President. Thanks for the wake-up call, Steve Kruger. Well, thank you, Steve. Don't know that I can add anything to that any more than I can at any other time, you grace us with a rant. Thank you for it anyway. We have a call from Ralph in New Jersey. A question about currencies. Hello, Ralph.
Yep.
Excuse me? Hello?
Oh, yes. I apologize. Hi, Martin. Richard, this is Ralph from New Jersey.
Okay.
Okay, can you hear me? Okay, good. My question is, I am actually from Poland, immigrated from Poland to U.S., and my question is, what do you think about Poland? I mean, what do you see Poland, you know, compared to U.S.?
You've hit my soft spot, my weak spot here, my Achilles heel. And unfortunately, Ralph, I mean, I'm not familiar with Poland. Poland is dangerously close to those Baltic states, though, and they are in deep trouble. I really find it hard. I have a feeling, and I have a feeling that I heard at one point that Poland had been borrowing money in Swiss francs in order to create their own version of a stimulus and a bubble. And now, of course, they have to pay back the money in Swiss francs, that had problems with their currency. So this could be a very serious problem. But in general, if you are comparing with Poland to the United States, I have had people actually before from Poland, and I have who have actually talked about going back to Poland. How long have you been in the States, Ralph?
Oh, I mean, I've been here for almost 19 years. So.
Well, you might certainly want to think about going back. I mean, I don't know whether you have ties here which would prevent you going back, but all this comes into, you know, what we're going to be talking about on Sunday, about emigration and the reason that it might be fortuitous to think about moving. I mean, you have somewhere to go, which is actually very nice. I do think that, socially speaking, things are going to get really Armageddon-like in the United States, very, very hellish indeed. And I think that those who have the ability, either financial or social, familial, as it were, to go to another country, should take advantage of it. In terms of the currency, I really can't help you. I don't know. It's the zloty, I think, right? Is that the currency? And
yeah,
I have no real.
Right now it's about 280, I believe, to a dollar.
Yeah. I don't follow it. So it's what we call an exotic currency. It's not a major currency. So I can't really give you guidance on that. But I don't know whether you're talking in terms of the currency because of your, you know, geographical intentions, i.e., you know, moving back there, or whether you're just interested in knowing whether to buy some real estate. I fear that you are looking to buy something. I would not buy anything anywhere. This is a generalized
deflation
worldwide. No,
I'm not looking to buy anything. Actually, I'm, you know, thinking about moving or just staying there temporarily. I mean, I do have a flat or, you know, apartment to stay there just in case. But I'm
okay.
Yeah.
Yep, well,
I had one
hang on to the, yeah.
I just wanted to attest to that I'm actually one of my further family members did actually took a mortgage in Swiss francs and they got burnt. Really bad.
I'm afraid so.
Yeah.
This was. I wish they'd talk to me first. I mean, this is the sort of thing which, you know, comes about because you get these fast-talking salesmen promising you the earth. And this is a word to the wise, ladies and gentlemen. You know, this experience of Ralph's is very, very frequent and common in the Eastern European countries. And so be very careful when you take these homemade versions of what we call the carry trade. You know, you cannot mess around with currencies when you have needs in a particular currency. You really need to stick with that currency. It's very, very dangerous to dicker with exchange rates in that way. But anyway, Ralph, thank you very much for the call. Interesting. And join us on Sunday if you'd like to talk more about, you know, the potential for immigration. It would be good to hear from you.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye. All right. So I have a lady who has asked me not to divulge her name and not even to read her email verbatim, so I won't. But she is very anxious to learn what to do during the meltdown. She has said that I've talked a lot about the background. Perhaps we should mix in what we should do, too, because the background is history, and you're absolutely right about that. And there's nothing we can do about it. We can learn from it, but as you're right in saying, it's over, the nuts and bolts, what to do now. I will be talking about that. I find that it's not helpful to come out with a shopping list of things to do. I prefer to sort of take things one by one, and that's actually why I'm talking about immigration on Sunday, and not that I want you to miss out on anything here on the regular shows, but we do need to consider radical situations, I think, in the United States, and they are things which we will discuss more and more as time goes by and as the information and the fundamentals actually deteriorate. So anyway, you're right, lady from New Jersey who likes to remain anonymous. You are right, we want to keep our money in short-term treasuries. 6 months' worth of cash in the home is fine. But you don't need to keep it in the home. You really, for the time being, you can keep it in the bank. But you're making all the right moves. So congratulations and keep up the good work. All right. Andy wrote in saying, Richard, I'm writing this during the break, so I'll keep it short. What would be the process and effects of the U.S. government going into default? How would it affect the state's bonds and treasuries, other than making them a complete loss? And how would it affect our dealings with other countries, as the dollar is the world's reserve currency, and many other nations appear to be teetering on the edge themselves? Finally, what do you think the chances would be of us doing something along the lines of what North Korea did, swapping out our current currency for a new one at a fractional rate, which would destroy savings but potentially reduce debt as well? Thanks for the insights, Andy. Correction, Andy, wouldn't reduce the debt. It would simply transform it into another currency. I don't think it will happen. I think the Amero and all these things is a figment of everybody's imagination. It's a lot of posturing on behalf of people who want to make a name for themselves. Not going to happen. The idea of the destruction of savings comes about much more efficiently through a devaluation of the current currency. But not necessarily, you know, through swapping it out for a new one. Countries in the past, what they have done is they've just lopped zeros off the end of their currency. In fact, I think it's right to say that Argentina has taken off some 25 zeros from their currency since the mid-1970s. But that just basically doesn't change the currency. It just reconfigures the actual unit of the same currency. All right, so thank you for the question, Andy. We come now to John Ilo, who has a severe and grave criticism of me, and I do not shy away from making it public on the waves. Well, Richard, he says, you did recommend that we take short positions at different times throughout the recent past. As of now, this has proven to be a mistake. So I guess one could say you have done a terrible job in predicting the market's direction this year. That said, the future is as of yet unwritten, and you did accurately predict the market's movement over the last few years, so you deserve a pass. John Ilo. You are absolutely correct, John. I stand castigated in front of the world. We'll say that I did it before as well, so this is not the first time
that I did this. I have done this before, and what we do in that situation is we wait out the storm. We wait it out patiently, and then we clean up at the end of the day. And that is precisely what I think is going to happen, John. So I am not concerned by the fact that our positions have gone against us somewhat. I think that this is par for the course. When you invest, you must expect that the profits do not always come immediately. They can sometimes take weeks or even months to materialize, and this particular situation is no exception. But I do foresee a rapid and a brutal readjustment of all these markets in due course. It looks like it's already happening with the bond market, which traditionally precedes the fall in the stock market, but the stock market is in grave danger right now. The internals are deteriorating quite substantially, and so I think we will be doing fine in the fullness of time, John. And thank you very much for the email, and I take what you say very seriously. All right, we have Henry from New York and Steve. I think we should start with Henry because his call came in first. Henry, hi, how are you?
How are you, Richard? Thank you very much for taking my call. Richard, quick question for you. What do you think about the Canadian dollar right now and also about investing in silver coins, particularly silver dollars, to hold them as a form of currency?
Very simply, the Canadian dollar would be a good investment if I thought that the foreign currencies were going to rise against the United States dollar, which I don't. I think that the U.S. dollar, as I said earlier on in the program, is going to rise against the other currencies for the time being, meaning that I think that the currencies will fall quite substantially, and so will gold, and so will silver. So I wouldn't touch the metals or the currencies at all right now. Bide your time, do what you need to do, what we talk about in the U.S. dollar, and then as things materialize and play themselves out, we might talk about other things. But for the time being, I wouldn't do either of those things.
Richard, what type of time horizon do you have on that currency
move?
Don't know.
I could so easily say, oh, it could be 6 months, could be 8 months, could be a year. Not going to say that. I don't know. I have no idea. And all I can say is that I think I will have a good feeling for when it actually becomes time to go into the metals or into foreign currencies.
What signs would indicate that the dollar has topped out?
Yep, you'd see intraday sharp intraday reversals in currencies, in the metals, in the dollar itself. You would see the sentiment, which was very, very negative towards the dollar recently, suddenly go very positive. Everybody's saying, oh, look, you see, everything's getting better. The economy is turning around. The dollar, the great United States dollar, is going up. After all, we all knew it would eventually, and it has now, and it's got much, much, much further to go. That kind of a talk you'll hear on the airwaves. You'll see it written in newspapers, magazines. That's the sort of thing that indicates that sentiment has become very bullish on the dollar, and that's your signal to go the other way.
I see. Okay, thank you, Richard.
Been a pleasure. Thank you for the call. Steve from D.C., I believe you are on the line. Hi.
Good evening, Mr. Martin. Great show, great information.
Thank you.
I have a question. Having some stock shares in a privately held company, is that a good thing, or should one sell those and get the cash right now?
Sell them and get the cash.
Okay. Even if it's a good...
You did say stock certificate. You said stock, common stocks of shares in the stock market. That's what you were basically referring to.
Exactly.
Yeah. Why do you mention the certificates? I mean, you could keep your certificates with the broker. You know, I don't know why you feel you want to keep the certificates themselves. Do you have them in your safekeeping, or do you keep them in a bank or with a stockbroker, or what?
No, I don't. I'm about to get it.
I'm sorry, say it again.
I'm about to get it from the company. So the question do I sell them and just grab the cash, or do I keep the certificate? I don't know. But you're saying
Do you want to tell me which the company is?
Not over the air. I can speak.
Not over the air. Well, give me a call if you want to talk about the particular company. You're welcome to call me, 941-441-1682, and we'll talk about it. You know,
what time is the best time?
In principle, I'm sorry.
What time is the best time?
Any time after the show, I'll be around before I go to bed.
Thank you.
You know, and look forward to it. Thanks. Take care. All right. We had another. I had another message from Steve, who says as follows: The White House says they have created or saved 1.5 million jobs. I have to ask: How do you save a job? And how the hell do you keep track of it? And if the jobs were created in the USA or Asia? I find the White House statement is like saying you saved a woman from getting raped by changing your mind and then looking for a pat on the back or an attaboy. Richard, the government doesn't think we're stupid. They know it without any doubt. Steve Kruger. Well said, Steve. Pithy, direct, and to the point. Proud of you, as I am. Unfortunately, and this is, you know, where, as I've always said, you know, the wake-up call comes in handy here for you, ladies and gentlemen. You are being lied to. You're being lied to from every corner. You do not have any of the forces of the economy on your side here. They're trying to push you into bad investments. They're trying to push you into bad purchases of things you neither want nor need, as they have been doing for many, many years. They're trying to get you to take out loans. They're doing everything they can to pass off the responsibility and the onus of their own mistakes onto you, the taxpayer. And if you do not bite the bullet, guess what they are going to do? They are going to raise your taxes. In fact, they're going to raise your taxes anyway. But if you don't do their bidding, they will make life very difficult for you indeed. This is not a game. This is no joke. This is not a time to be studying the lay of the land and just reading the newspapers and watching television and taking in the information, passing on to other things. This is time to sit up and take note. These people are serious. They are in trouble. They have their backs against the wall. You know, Bernanke's own job is in the balance here. Nobody wants the guy around, but Obama's probably going to win, and he'll probably be reconfirmed by the Senate anyway. These people, you and the government are parting ways. The government is not operating in your interest. I hope I've made this very clear in the past, you know, that they do not have your interests at heart. And until the time comes when it becomes clear to you that they are operating against your interests, you are likely to make very foolish mistakes indeed with your money and with your investments and with your homes, and do not do this. In fact, you know, I actually have a piece by somebody who suggests that you should actually stop paying your mortgage. And this was a piece that came in to me courtesy of Mike Brungs, and I was hoping to have the opportunity to play it to you, but or rather to read it to you, because it's a short piece, but it's very, very interesting, from a man called Brent White, who believes he's a University of Arizona law professor. And he came out with a new paper, which is hitting a nerve as the American housing crisis enters its fourth year. And I thought it was very interesting, and I will try to get to that on Monday. But you're not going to get much information of that nature. You won't get many people suggesting that you do what might be considered non-mainstream or antisocial behavior. But you have yourselves to think about, and you must consider your own situations before dealing with other situations. Quite frankly, ladies and gentlemen, I had thought that our time was up. It is indeed 11 a.m. It is midnight here in Singapore, and nobody has told me that we have given me any timing markers, and so I have no idea why I'm still being allowed to speak. So, you know, I guess I should just go on speaking until I'm either cut off.